Hello, welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, June 9th. I'm Dagna, your reader today. We'll be reading local Siouxland news plus tri-state news. We will begin with the mini editorial, which today is written by David Atkins of Sioux City. And David writes, "Do I have this right? Rob Sands used his office as state auditor to accuse Governor Reynolds of campaigning on government funds because she taped public service announcements about COVID. He then has traveled around the state to tell people that he accused the governor of misusing funds. I wonder if he is doing this on the taxpayer dime as public service." Again, this is the opinion and written by David Atkins of Sioux City. Our first story has the headline, "As fireworks sales begin, Sioux City hopes to avoid last year's spike of illegal discharges." And this article is written by Dolly Butts from the Sioux City Journal. With the sale of fireworks having already begun in permanent buildings in Iowa, and tents and temporary structures in the state set to kick off selling on June 13th, Sioux City Community Policing Sergeant Jeremy McClure hopes 2020 spike in fireworks complaints was just a COVID-19 anomaly. Last year, Sioux City police officers were dispatched to nearly 100 more fireworks-related complaints than in 2017, the year Iowa lifted an 84-year ban on fireworks discharge. "Since we had a lot of coronavirus restrictions and people were staying home more and not traveling and doing other things, that kind of increased the problem," McClure said. "Hopefully this year, with more stuff going on and more awareness of how much of an issue it is, people will abide by the law more." How residents behave in the days and weeks leading up to and after this year's Independence Day could determine whether fireworks discharge in city limits is further limited by the city council or banned outright. Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore said it's critical that residents abide by the two-day discharge limit. "The city's ordinance allows fireworks to be legally discharged from 1 to 11 p.m. on July 3rd and July 4th, and from 1 p.m. on December 31st until 12:30 a.m. on January 1st. However, some individuals have been discharging fireworks 2 to 3 weeks before and after the July 4th and New Year's Eve holidays. Last year, I think some of the council members were ready to ban the fireworks," said Moore, who said he believes confusion exists over the beginning of fireworks sales and when fireworks can legally be discharged in the city. "I said I would like to get at least some public service announcements out the following year, which we are in now, and just let everybody know it's 2 days only, and it's only those 2 days." Jerry Peterson, owner of King Kong Fireworks, said he thinks residents understand the city's ordinance, but some don't want to follow the rules. The weekend before the Sioux City store was set to open for the season, Peterson said quite a few customers were already looking to shop for fireworks. "We usually don't see that too much. I think it's going to be probably almost better than last year," he said of sales. "I just think people have money in their pocket and they're just ready to get out and do something." Numerous noise complaints in the days leading up to 2017's 4th of July led council members to vote in December of that year to shrink the legal fireworks discharge window from 10 days to 2. Then, this past January, after pet owners, veterans, and numerous other residents complained about the unpredictable loud bangs and screeches, the council passed ordinance changes that added a municipal infraction penalty for property owners who permit fireworks violations to occur on their property. A first offense is $250, a second offense is $500, and a third or subsequent offense is $1,000. Fireworks shortage. Toilet paper, hand sanitizer, chlorine tablets, refrigerators, chicken wings, and microchips are just some of the items that have been in short supply amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Add fireworks to that list. China's production and shipping issues have caused a nationwide fireworks shortage, which is impacting Siouxland sellers. Jerry Peterson, owner of King Kong Fireworks in Sioux City, said shipping costs have doubled. Shipping containers are in short supply in China, and shipments of fireworks are backed up at U.S. ports. "Normally, we would be completely fully stocked. We would have all of our back stock," he said. "I think we're just going to sell out of what we have. If we don't get any more, we'll be empty by the 4th of July. Peterson said numerous fireworks stands across the country likely won't even open this year because they won't get their product in time. Permanent buildings in Iowa, like King Kong Fireworks, were allowed to begin selling fireworks on Tuesday, while tents and temporary structures can open on June 13th. There's been some pretty crazy stories where people are just going and buying everything at retail. Then they're waiting for everyone else to run out and marking everything up, Peterson said. And now we're back to the violations, what happens with the violations on the fines. Before the changes, only direct violators could be charged with simple misdemeanors. Illegal fireworks discharge carries a minimum $250 fine on private property and $500 on city property. The way I'm reading the ordinance is then the homeowner or renter could be issued the civil penalty. Even though I couldn't prove who's lighting the fireworks off, we could still hold the property owner accountable, McClure said. Although McClure said the revised ordinance gives police another tool to work with, he acknowledged that officer staffing levels can make the act of enforcing it challenging. He said the department typically has one or two extra officers looking for and responding to illegal fireworks discharge incidents a week or two before the holiday and a few days after. We still got to take our other calls, the assaults, the thefts, the car accidents. Those are going to take priority, a lot of times, over some of these other issues. And so, by the time we have an officer available, it's done, he said of illegal fireworks discharge. Throughout the year, we'll see someone light off a firework and he gets called in. It's tough to locate one or two fireworks lit off. The Woodbury County Communications Center received 654 complaints concerning fireworks discharge in 2020, while officers initiated 43 such calls themselves for a grand total of 697 dispatched calls. That's up 267 calls from the year before and 96 from 2017. So far this year, as of May 26, 18 such calls have been recorded. The number of citations for fireworks violations issued by officers, however, dropped in 2020 compared to 2017. Officers issued just 12 citations last year, an increase from the 4 issued in 2019, but just half the number of citations issued in 2017. As of May 26, 0 citations have been issued for the current year. Obviously, it's a problem. It's going to get to the point where we have to step up enforcement, said McClure, who urged residents to leave city limits if they want to discharge fireworks outside of the legal time frame. We're begging people to please abide by the ordinance. Moore said he has been working on TV and radio public service announcements to remind residents to comply with the city's ordinance. The PSAs are slated to air from mid-June through the holiday. If it does not make a difference, I think we will have an uphill battle trying to keep the ban from happening, he said. I'm hoping that we will be able to govern ourselves, do what's right, and show respect for our neighbors. Our next story is about acts added to Saturday in the Park, and this is written by Earl Horlick, and the headline is Trombone Shorty, Wiz the MC among acts added to Saturday in the Park. An eclectic collection of musicians of many genres will grace the main stage bandshell and the Abe stage when the 30th Saturday in the Park returns to Grandview Park on July 2nd and 3rd. Sioux City-based indie band Ghost Cat will open on the main stage at 5 p.m. July 2nd, followed by hip-hop artist Wiz the MC, who will lead into the best-selling pop rocker AJR, who were previously announced as the first evening's headliners. Sioux City alternative rockers Ultraviolet Fever will hit the main stage at 2 p.m. July 3rd, followed by CTA, a band fronted by Danny Serafine, a founding member of the legendary group Chicago. Critically acclaimed singer-songwriter Valerie June will come next, before Trombone Shorty, a New Orleans soul artist and a former Saturday in the Park performer, who will serve as a supporting act for veteran rocker John Fogerty, who is the evening's headliner. On July 2nd, the Abe stage will open with the Sioux City-based country singer Dane Lewis, who will be followed by Denver alternative rockers Eclectic Animals and Minneapolis funk beatboxer Heatbox. Southern California punk rockers Face to Face will be the headliner of the evening, which finishes with Des Moines EDM artist Richie Daggers at 11 p.m. Students from the Sioux City Conservatory of Music will begin July 3rd's Abe Stage Entertainment at 2 p.m. They will be followed by Omaha hip-hopper Mr. Bomb and alternative rockers Glue. Sioux City hip-hopper Psychedelic Sidekick and Dad will perform back-to-back before introducing supporting act Young Gravy, from a rapper from Rochester, Minnesota. Hip-hop's Waka Flocka Flame of New York will headline the night, which concludes with Des Moines-based EDMer Kill OG. Saturday in the Park co-founder David Bernstein and Abe Stage co-organizer Kelly Quinn unveiled the lineup during a news conference Tuesday afternoon at Marty's Tap. Quinn said securing enough talent for two nights of Abe Stage Entertainment was challenging, since Saturday in the Park is usually held on a single Saturday. The decision to spread the outdoor music festival over 2 days was a way to keep crowds to a minimum due to COVID-19 concerns. So was the decision to distribute general admission tickets as a way to keep tabs on attendance. Bernstein said the process of distributing tickets is still yet to be determined. Those interested in being on a mailing list can sign up at SaturdayInThePark.com. Fire extinguished at Sioux City Foundry. Sioux City firefighters quickly extinguished a fire at Sioux City Foundry Tuesday morning. A call was received at 8:34 a.m. at the site, 2107 7th Street. When firefighters responded to the scene, there was light smoke coming from overhead doors, and the fire was located in a piece of machinery. Firefighters were able to extinguish the fire within 15 minutes of the alarm, Deputy Fire Sheriff Ryan Collins said. There was no structural damage and no injuries. Because the foundry is an industrial environment, firefighters have unique problems that must be addressed, Collins said. They must work with the building maintenance to isolate the power to the specific area of the building or determine if special equipment is needed to access the area. For this particular fire, extra hose line had to be added to reach the fire due to the sheer size of the building. Collins said clearing the smoke from the building took the longest, but with the equipment and the foundry's equipment, workers were able to return to work. Sioux City Mardi Gras Parade is July 1st. Tens of thousands of beads will be thrown into the crowds that line the streets during the 2021 Sioux City Mardi Gras Parade, which is slated for July 1st. The parade, which serves as a kickoff to Saturday in the Park, will start at the Tyson Events Center at 6 p.m. The route will make a left out of the Tyson's parking lot onto Pierce Street, then right on 3rd and end on Iowa Street. The annual Mardi Gras celebration usually includes a gala with performers from both Sioux City and Lake Charles, Louisiana in costumes. This year, festivities only include the parade, which has previously been known as the Big Parade. The 2020 Big Parade and Mardi Gras Festival were canceled due to the global COVID-19 pandemic. The Crew de Charlie Sioux will still be participating and welcoming our friends from Lake Charles for the parade. There is a lot of planning that goes into hosting these events, and with shorter timelines, we wanted to ensure that we were able to provide the best possible experience for the event and our community. There are exciting plans for 2022, so stay tuned for those next year. This was said in an email from Enzo Carinanti, Assistant General Manager and Director of Marketing at the Tyson. Carinanti said the parade's name is a combination of the past. According to a statement from Spectra, registration is now open for groups and organizations to sign up for the parade. Visit TysonCenter.com or contact the Prime Bank Box Office at the Tyson Events Center at 712-279-4850. Helan to hold charity auction on Wednesday. The Bishop Helan Auction Tailgate for Helan will be held at 5 p.m. Wednesday at the O'Gorman Fieldhouse and Crusader Courtyard. The event will include mobile bidding, a live auction, Pride Blitz, and a fund-a-cause for the Helan Weight Room. It will also include award presentations for Crusader of the Year and Distinguished Volunteer of the Year. Auction chair couples are John and Liz Dieterman, Rick and Becca Fialto, Jared and Peggy Higman, and Greg and Laura Topf. Dinner will be served from tailgate tents honoring Iowa, Iowa State, Nebraska, Helan, and Notre Dame, among other schools. The dinner will take place at the Crusader Courtyard, and guests will dine on the fieldhouse floor. The auction is the only yearly fundraising event that includes all of the Catholic schools in Sioux City. Bishop Helan High School, Holy Cross School, Sacred Heart School, Mater Dei School, and the Dual Language Academy. This year's fundraising goal is $375,000. Guests will be encouraged to wear their favorite team colors. To buy tickets or to learn more information, visit bidpal.net/Helan Auction or call 712-252-1350. We now have a South Dakota story. It's union vote authorizes strike at South Dakota pork plant. The union at a Smithfield Foods pork processing plant in South Dakota engaged in contract negotiations Tuesday, armed with the authorization to call a strike. The strike authorization at the Sioux Falls chapter of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union was overwhelmingly approved late Monday, with 98% of the vote total, the union said. However, union leaders said they hope to avoid a work stoppage as they meet with company representatives on Tuesday. Meatpacking workers have become emboldened after a virus outbreak at the plant last year killed 4 workers and infected nearly 1,300. The union is demanding that Smithfield boost its wage offerings in a 4-year contract to match those at JBS Pork Plant in the regions, as well as make several other concessions on break times and in employee insurance costs. We are not going to change our minds, said B.J. Motley, the president of the local union. Smithfield Foods, which is based in Virginia, has said its initial offer, which was rejected by the union last week, is in full alignment with agreements that UFCW has already accepted at other plants. A strike at the plant, which produces roughly 5% of the nation's pork supply every day, could create ripple effects from hog farmers to supermarket shelves. When the plant shuttered in April 2020 alongside others experiencing virus outbreaks, it highlighted the vulnerability of the meat supply chain. Major meatpacking companies convinced former President Donald Trump to declare them essential to national security. Smithfield, like other large meatpacking companies, spent millions of dollars to incentivize workers and outfit plants with plexiglass safety barriers. It has pointed out that after the plant reopened, large outbreaks were avoided. Mark Lawrenson, the UFCW's National Vice President of Meatpacking, said pay has increased significantly throughout the industry since the pandemic began. Last spring, the meat companies generally offered some temporary form of additional pay for workers while the coronavirus spread quickly through meatpacking plants. Most companies made those pay increases permanent last year, giving most workers a couple more dollars per hour. Then additional pay raises have been negotiated as contracts expired over the past year. Lawrenson said the base rate of pay at most pork plants is now up to $19 an hour, an increase of about $3.60 from before the pandemic. We're finally in a place where these workers are getting the raises they deserved for years, he said. The union wants Smithfield to match the starting rate of $19 an hour offered at a JBS pork plant 70 miles away in Worthington, Minnesota. Workers have said those wages, as well as a sudden boost in pay at fast food chains or retail stores, have drawn employees away from the Smithfield plant and forced those left behind to work harder and longer. Smithfield Foods did not immediately respond to a request for comment on Tuesday. Motley did not offer a deadline for when a strike could happen, but said the union would wait until Smithfield makes a final contract offer. Besides Sioux Falls, Smithfield is also in contract talks with the union at large plants in Crete, Nebraska and Tar Heel, North Carolina. Medicaid lawsuit paused as Nebraska expands benefits. A lawsuit that sought to block Nebraska from imposing a 2-tiered Medicaid expansion system with more benefits for people working, volunteering, or meeting other requirements is on hold after state officials said they would give all participants the same benefits. Lancaster County District Judge Susan Strong granted a motion Friday to pause legal proceedings until October 4th, the first business day after everyone enrolled in Medicaid expansion will get the extra services available under the state's premium plan. The motion was filed after an agreement between the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services, which administers the state Medicaid program, and Nebraska Appleseed, a Lincoln-based advocacy group that filed the lawsuit. State officials announced recently that they would abandon plans for a limited tier of coverage for most Medicaid expansion patients. According to the motion, the department must give monthly reports to Nebraska Appleseed and the court about its progress in meeting its October 1st goal for launching the additional services. If the services are implemented on time, the lawsuit may be dismissed. Most low-income working-age adults would have gotten a more limited set of benefits under Republican Governor Pete Ricketts' original Medicaid expansion plan, but they still would have been eligible for physical and mental health care and prescription drugs. Applicants who were working, volunteering, caring for a relative, or doing other activities at least 80 hours a month would have qualified for coverage for three additional benefits: vision, dental, and over-the-counter medications. Nebraska voters expanded Medicaid in a 2018 statewide referendum, despite opposition from Ricketts and other prominent conservatives. State officials opened the program for enrollment nearly 2 years later, arguing that they needed time to implement it correctly. The unusually slow rollout drew criticism from program backers who said the state was taking too long. President Donald Trump's administration gave initial approval to Ricketts' two-tier plan in October, but President Joe Biden's administration made clear that it would not approve the community engagement requirements. Expanded Medicaid offers coverage for working-age adults whose incomes fall below 138% of the federal poverty level, $17,774 for a single person, or $36,570 for a family of four. Judge rips Iowa police chief for using stun gun on partiers. A judge has condemned an Iowa police chief for using his city-issued stun gun to shock guests at two parties in 2016, calling it an immoral activity that could have caused serious injuries or death. Judge Nancy Wittenberg recently rejected arguments by Craig Merrill, the police chief in Armstrong, that his deployment of the taser device in an off-duty social setting against voluntary participants was not a criminal act. Merrill did not have justification to use a defensive weapon with the intent to cause pain for entertainment purposes on compliant partygoers, Wittenberg wrote in a ruling dated May 27th. Noting that the weapon is capable of causing injuries ranging from burning skin to death, she added, "Merrill is exceptionally lucky that no one suffered a medical emergency or died at the party." Merrill was charged in February with two counts of assault with a dangerous weapon for using the stun gun against Armstrong's then-maintenance director, Tyler Evans, and several others who attended parties at Merrill's home in April and July of 2016. Defendant Merrill announced that he knew he was not supposed to do this, attempted to prevent partygoers from documenting the crime, and told partygoers he would lie to the city council about whether the taser darts had been deployed, prosecutors said in a recent filing. Prosecutors say Merrill collected $30 from guests to pay for the city to replace the cost of the gun's cartridge, but never deposited the funds. At a second gathering around July 4th, Merrill admitted that he had shocked everyone who attended multiple times using the device's drive stun function, which delivers electrical shocks as a method of pain compliance, prosecutors allege. Merrill also allegedly tried to erase the device's memory before it was seized by investigators, but a state official was able to extract data showing bursts of activity on the dates of the parties. Authorities arrested Merrill in February, along with his father-in-law, then Armstrong Mayor Greg Baum, and the former city clerk Connie Thackeray, in what prosecutors have described as a long-running and wide-ranging corruption scheme in the town of 900 people. Two other former city clerks have pleaded guilty and are cooperating with investigators. Prosecutors say Merrill, 43, collected $24,000 on an unused paid time off to which he was not entitled and accepted a free vacation in 2017 to the Black Hills in South Dakota, paid for by his political supporters in violation of state law. He's also charged with ongoing criminal conduct, first-degree theft, and non-felonious misconduct in office. The city placed Merrill on unpaid administrative leave after his arrest and is relying on the Emmett County Sheriff's Office for policing services. Baum has resigned as mayor. Attorneys for Merrill had asked the judge to dismiss the assault charges. They argued that Evans had signed a document consenting to be stunned and that Merrill's use of the stun gun during a voluntary social activity was legal under an exemption to the assault law for contact sports. Wittenberg rejected those arguments, writing that consent is not a defense to assault, and tasering would never be considered a proper sport or social activity. She noted that the exemption for sports activities only covered assaults that were reasonably foreseeable and do not create unreasonable risks of injury, neither of which applied in this case. Typical birthday party attendees do not expect the hired clown or magician to start electrocuting or incapacitating people, she wrote. She said that while the drive stun function in which the device is pressed against the body may seem safer than shooting electrical probes from a distance, it still carries the risk of burning and permanently scarring skin. Wittenberg also rejected arguments that the charges were barred by the statute of limitations. Merrill, Bum, and Thackeray have pleaded not guilty to the charges, and an August 20 hearing has been scheduled to set a trial date. They are all free on bond. Huskers baseball coach Will Bolt to make appearance next week in South Sioux City. Will Bolt is coming to Siouxland. The University of Nebraska Athletics Department announced Tuesday which coaches will stop in select cities on the Big Red Blitz. South Sioux City is among the cities on the Blitz, and it is in Group 10. The event will be at Covington Links Golf Course at noon, Wednesday, June 16th. Then they'll stop at West Point High School at 3 p.m. Bolt, the Huskers baseball coach, will be among the attendees at the South Sioux stop. Bolt will be joined by football assistant coach Barrett Rude and associate women's basketball coach Chuck Love. Derek Engelbart, Nebraska's assistant general manager of athletic partners, will emcee the event. Bolt headlines the event, and his baseball team just came off an appearance at the NCAA tournament. Kevin Copps threw 90 pitches in his third relief appearance of the weekend and 185 overall in the regional. And pinch hitter Charlie Welch smashed a titanic three-run homer with two outs in the bottom of the eighth inning as the number one ranked Hogs downed Nebraska 6-2 in the Fayetteville regional final. Nebraska, which forced Monday's winner-take-all game with a 5-3 upset Sunday night, took a 2-0 lead in the fifth inning, and the Baum Stadium crowd, rowdy all weekend, was abuzz with the nervous energy that often sinks the favorite when the pressure is on. But solo home runs in the fifth and sixth innings, Arkansas 100th and 101st of the season, tied the game. Year two for Will Bolt ended with a 34-14 record, a Big Ten championship, and a team meeting in a shallow right field after NU came perhaps within inches of pushing the number one overall national seed to the bottom of the ninth or beyond. Nebraska announced 10 groups that are covering 20 locations for this event, which is meant to get Husker coaches and administrators in front of fans person to person again for the first time since before the pandemic. Athletic director Bill Moos is headed all the way out to Scotts Bluff and Alliance, while football coach Scott Frost will be in North Platte and Kearney. Capacity for each event, according to the Nebraska news release, is limited, and fans are going to be admitted on a first-come, first-served basis. Football head coach Scott Frost will be in Kearney and North Platte. Volleyball coach John Cook will be in Chadron and Valentine. And men's basketball coach Fred Hoiberg will travel to Grand Island and Hastings. Huskers athletic director Bill Moos will be in Alliance and Scotts Bluff. Metro Athlete of the Week. Evie Larson brings toughness to Black Raiders staff. They just don't come any tougher than Evie Larson. When the East High School pitcher toes the rubber, Black Raiders head coach Bubba Malinowski knows one thing. He is going to get a tough, gritty performance from his senior starter. Last season, as a junior, Larson served as the main starter while pitching much of the season with a broken right leg. It started out as a stress fracture in her fibula, but eventually the bone just broke. She kept playing and earned a five-inning win in the Black Raiders' 13-3 win over Sioux City West in the Class 5A regional quarterfinals. She did so while fighting through tremendous pain and only found out after the season that she had fractured the bone. I wouldn't say it was a 10 out of a 10 on the pain scale, but I would definitely say it was a 9, Larson said. It was pretty painful. This season, Larson has continued to find ways to win. Last week, she earned a pair of wins, one on June 3rd against Sioux City North and the second on June 5th against River Valley. In the win against North, Larson pitched 5 shutout innings with 3 strikeouts, while also going 2-for-4 at the plate, with a double and a home run, as the Raiders beat the Stars 12-0. 2 days later, she allowed just 2 hits and 1 earned run in the team's 11-3 win over the Wolverines. For her performance, Larson has been selected as the Journal's Metro Athlete of the Week. According to Malinowski, one of Larson's biggest attributes is her willingness to rely on her defense. She might not be the prototypical high school high strikeout dominant ace, but she still manages to win games. She competes when she is on the mound, Malinowski said. She knows that she is not a strikeout pitcher, but she knows that she can compete. She mixes pitches well, and she really uses her defense. Evie has done a fantastic job for us. Like I said, she competes day in and day out for us. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, June 9th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. We'll now turn to today's obituaries. We'll begin with from Sioux City. Claire Larson passed away after a thankfully brief struggle with cancer in Sioux City on Saturday, April 24th at the age of 87. A memorial service will be 2 p.m. Monday at Christy Smith Funeral Home's Morningside Chapel, 1801 Morningside Avenue, with visitation 1 hour prior. Online condolences can be expressed to the family at christysmith.com. Born July 4, 1933, in Ayrshire, Iowa, into a farming family, he graduated from high school in 1951 and enlisted in the U.S. Navy shortly after. Claire married his high school sweetheart and love of his life, Glennis Rustin, on July 16, 1952, and served honorably aboard the USS Philippine Sea as an aviation machinist mate maintaining F-4U Corsairs, supporting operations against North Korea during the Korean War, and at a naval air station, Corpus Christi, Texas, before moving his family to Des Moines, where he remained in the Naval Reserve until 1962. Initially a meat cutter, Claire trained as an electronics technician and worked for Sears Roebuck in Des Moines at night in their electronics repair shop before joining the company permanently. He rose through the ranks to become the manager of the Sears Roebuck Service and Maintenance Department at stores in Mankato, Minnesota, and Sioux City, retiring after 32 years of service. He then worked for Michael's Arts and Crafts in their framing shop for 18 years before finally retiring for good at the age of 80. Claire was a truly good man whose word was his word and whose handshake meant relationship. He lived a life and treated people in such a way that those who were associated with him stayed in his orbit and remained friends for decades. He served his country with pride, executed all of his jobs to the utmost of his ability, and firmly adhered to a philosophy of doing what was right, even if it was painful. He was a mechanical and electrical genius who could fix anything from cars to TVs to plumbing, and who was regularly asked for help by his friends. He loved to fish, read, and watch military history and do crossword puzzles. Most importantly, he instilled in his children the same values, drive, and conscience. In lieu of flowers, please send a memorial donation to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Thomas A. Houts, 43, of Sioux City, passed away Sunday, June 6, at his home, surrounded by his family. Celebration of life will be from 2 to 5 Sunday at M's Restaurant, 1021 4th Street, Sioux City. Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Bluff is assisting with arrangements. Condolences may be directed to the funeral home. Thomas Allen Houts, and that's spelled H-O-U-T-S, was born November 3, 1977 in Frederick, Oklahoma, the son of Allen and Esther Allgood Houts. Thomas liked to hang out with his father-in-law Dennis and Grandpa Kenny Houts. He also enjoyed going to the movies with his best buddy Jim Greiner and his children's sporting events. He was an avid Sioux City Musketeers fan, which he shared with his children for many years. He loved to watch NASCAR racing. Jeff Gordon number 24 was his favorite. He also loved to mow Grandpa Kelly's lawn for as long as his body would allow him to do so. Thomas was a member of the Morningside Lodge 615, the Shrine Rat Patrol, and the Calvary Episcopal Church for many years. W. M. Bill Putes, 93, of Sioux City, passed away Thursday, June 3rd at Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center. Services will be 10 a.m. Monday at Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church with Father Roger Linden officiating. Burial will be in the Calvary Cemetery, followed by luncheon in the Blessed Sacrament Parish Center. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Sunday with a prayer service and rosary beginning at 7 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Bill was born on January 9, 1928 on the family farm near Primrose, Nebraska to John and Elizabeth Poots. He grew up on that same farm outside of Primrose and graduated from Primrose High School in 1945. He enlisted in the U.S. Army in April 1946 and served until April 1947. He attended the University of Notre Dame on the GI Bill and graduated in 1951. After graduation, he worked for the Travelers Insurance Companies until owning his own independent insurance agency. He served his clients faithfully for over 31 years until his retirement. On August 14, 1963, he married Patricia LeBrun at St. John Baptist Catholic Church in Sioux City. They were blessed with three wonderful children, Joe, John, and Ann. They were married 54 years until Pat's death on April 8, 2018. Bill's Catholic faith was an integral part of his life. He was a devout member of Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church and a daily Mass attendant until the COVID pandemic struck. He was an avid supporter of the University of Notre Dame. He enjoyed raising Brittany Spaniel dogs and hunting pheasants with his family and friends. He also enjoyed a beer or two each day after work. The family would like to thank Dr. Michael Jung and his staff at the Family Medicine Center for their care and support over the last several years. Memorial contributions may be made in Bill's honor to the Siouxland Y, where Bill was an active member for over 60 years. Cecilia T. Sokolowski, 94, of Sioux City, passed away in Hastings, Nebraska on Friday, June 4th. Memorial Mass will be 10 a.m. Saturday, July 10th at St. Gerald's Catholic Church, 96th and Q Streets in Omaha. Private family burial will be at the Evergreen Memorial Park Cemetery in Omaha. Livingston Butler Volan Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Hastings is serving the family. Cecilia was born to Frank and Catherine Rams on September 27, 1926 in Sioux City. She married Vincent Sokolowski on August 25, 1946 in Sioux City, where they made their home and raised their family in the house Vincent built for them. Cecilia was a loving wife and mother, dedicated to her husband and family. She treasured her children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, loving every minute she spent with them. Cecilia was a devout religious woman and an active member of her former parish, St. Francis Church. She enjoyed reading, music, fishing trips to Minnesota, happiness days, and spending time with family and friends. Cecilia was a member of Immaculate Conception Catholic Church. Jerry L. Carver, Sioux City, 69, died Monday, May 31st. Services will be June 12th at 4 p.m. at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Visitation will be June 12th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the funeral home. Natalie Shevland, Akron, Iowa, 81, died Sunday, June 6th. Services will be June 11th at 11 a.m. at the Trinity Lutheran Church in Akron. Visitation will be June 10th from 5 to 7 p.m. Arrangements by Wexwinkle Funeral Home, Akron. Linnell K. Amick, Bronson, Iowa, 73, died Tuesday, June 8th. Arrangements with Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Bluff. James R. Berglund, Sioux City, 71, died Monday, June 7th. Arrangements are pending with Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Gordon M. Johnson, 78, of Sioux City, passed away Thursday, June 3rd, at the University of Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha. Services will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday at Peace Reformed Church, 4100 Outer Drive North, Sioux City. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday with a prayer service and time of sharing at 7 p.m. The family will be present from 5 to 8 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel in Sioux City. Interment will be at the Memorial Park Cemetery. Online condolences may be expressed at meyerbroschapels.com. Gordon was married to Erlene Van Dreisen of Haywarden on September 18, 1962 at Lebanon Christian Reformed Church, Royal Sioux Center. He worked as an electrical inspector for the city of Sioux City until his retirement. He was a dedicated member of Peace Reformed Church. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Peace Reformed Church or Iowa Donor Network. Adeline L. Washinowski, 94, of Sioux City, passed away surrounded by her family on Monday, June 7th at a local nursing home. Service will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service. Burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery. Online condolences may be made to MeyerBrosChapels.com. Adeline was born on May 22, 1927 in Round Lake, Minnesota to Jack and Emma Prose. She graduated from Round Lake High School in 1945 and then graduated from Sioux City Cosmetology in 1966. She was united in marriage to Edward Eddie Skeets Washinowski on February 22, 1946 in Round Lake. He preceded her in death in 1995. Together, they lived in Worthington, Minnesota before coming to Sioux City in 1963. Adeline worked as a cosmetologist from 1966 to 1980, then at Tri-State Concessions from 1967 to 1984, and then finally for Greenberg Jewelry from 1980 to 2007. She was a member of Nativity Catholic Church and enjoyed spending time with her family. She sported her husband, Eddie Skeets, who was a prominent musician and band leader. She also focused on her interest in hairdressing and selling beautiful jewelry. Memorials may be made to the family for memorial masses. Joan Linnea Rye Mitchell, Sioux City, 82, died Wednesday, June 2nd. Services will be private. Burial will be at the Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be June 10th from 9:30 to 10:15 a.m. at St. Luke Lutheran Church, Sioux City. Masks will be required. Arrangements with Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Jerry L. Johnson, Sioux City, 70, died Sunday, May 30th. Private graveside services was held on June 7th, Memorial Park Cemetery. Arrangements were with the Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Bluff. Joan M. Whited Williams, Madison, Wisconsin, formerly of Sioux City, 56, died Wednesday, March 11th. Services will be June 11th at 11 a.m. at the Nicholas D. Jensen Funeral Home in Mobile. Burial will be at the Arlington Cemetery in Mobile. Visitation will be June 11th from 10:30 to 11 a.m. at the funeral home. Sheila C. John, 74, of Sioux City, passed away Sunday, June 6th at a local hospital. Services will be 10 a.m. Saturday at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Burial will be in Calvary Cemetery. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. Sheila Celeste Johns was born July 20, 1946 in Sioux City, the daughter of Earl and Ruth Chelsea. She married Gregory Johns on October 19, 2012. She served at the marina as a server for many years and at the Alban Club during the 80s and 90s. During the late 90s, she operated her own catering service and lately worked at Bishop Heelan High School. She loved her dog Roscoe and enjoyed baking and cooking. Stephen L. Parrish, Sergeant Bluff, 56, died Friday, June 4th. No services held at this time. Arrangements are with the Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Bluff. Diana Rose Oldenkamp, Haywarden, 83, died Saturday, June 5th. Services will be June 13th at 4 p.m. at the Peace Lutheran Church in Sioux Center. Visitation will be June 12th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Porter Funeral Home in Haywarden. Lane G. Hummel, Hornick, Iowa, 59, died Saturday, June 5th. Services will be June 15th at 10:30 a.m. at the Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City at 4125 Orleans Avenue. Burial will be at the Cushing Cemetery. Visitation will be June 14th from 4 to 8 p.m. at the funeral home. Betty L. Wessendorf, 83, of Sioux City, passed away Friday, June 4th at the local hospital. Services will be 7 p.m. Friday at Waterbury Funeral Service in Sioux City. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. with family present from 6 to 7 at the funeral home. Betty L. Wessendorf was born December 19, 1937 in Holstein, Iowa, the daughter of Melvin and Luetta Lauer. Betty married Richard Wessendorf on June 9, 1957. They made their home in Fort Dodge. Betty and Richard moved to Sioux City in 1971. Betty enjoyed watching NASCAR. Jeff Gordon No. 24 was her favorite, and visiting the casinos. She loved being with her fur baby, Barkley. The family would like to thank her good neighbor, Sharon Varvis, for her care and support throughout the years. And that concludes the obituaries for today. We'll now move back to the sports section and have some sports briefs. Wesselman named All-American. Briarcliff's baseball Jacob Wesselman capped off an impressive fourth season as a Charger with an honorable mention All-American honors as announced by the NAIA Tuesday. Wesselman, a pitcher, posted an 8-2 record on the mound in 12 starts for the Chargers. He threw 82 innings with 8 complete games and 2 shutouts. He held opponents to a batting average of 2.10, surrendered just 8 walks, and had an ERA of 2.3. Wesselman's 103 strikeouts led the G-Pack and set a new single-season program record. His best performance of the season was a 2-hit shutout win against Concordia with 9 strikeouts. Wesselman is the first Briarcliff Baseball All-American since 2016 and the first pitcher since 2003. Overall, he is the 23rd All-American in the program history. Morningside Golf gets All-Americans. Junior Leah Badosa, senior Samantha Knight, and freshman Sophia Castellan made history for the Morningside University Women's Golf Program. They were each named to the 2021 National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics Women's Golf Coaches Association All-American Teams. They are the first such awardees for the Mustangs. Badosa was a second team selection, while Castellan and Knight were both named to the third team list. Badosa and Quintero each tied for 29th at the National Championships May 25th through 28th, while Knight wound up tied for 41st. Due to their efforts, Morningside turned in a program best team finish, tying for 10th in the 30-team field. USD as WBB assistant. South Dakota women's basketball head coach Don Pleatsewhite announced Monday that Oakland assistant Ariel Breaker will be joining the Coyote women's basketball program as assistant coach and recruiting coordinator. She joins Jason Jeske, Aaron Horn, and Alex Antonin on the Coyote bench for the 21-22 season. Breaker's coaching career includes stints at Oakland, Lehigh, Western Texas, Grosse Pointe North, and Wayne State University. She has experience with player development of post players, recruiting, scouting, game strategy, scheduling, and mentoring student athletes. Breaker was a 2-year starter and tri-captain in her 4-year career at Notre Dame under Naismith Hall of Fame coach Muffet McGraw. She was a member of the winningest class in program history with a 131-15 overall record, 4 Final Four berths, and 3 national championship appearances. Well, now we have a soccer story. And the headline is, "We're Feeling Confident. Spencer Girls Beats North Polk to Advance to State Semifinals." The Spencer High School girls soccer team is still kicking. Thanks to a big day from junior Alexa Johnson, the 5th-seeded Tigers kept their season alive on Tuesday afternoon at the County Sports Complex in Des Moines as the team beat number 4 seed North Polk in the Class 2A state quarterfinals 3-1. With the win, Spencer advances to the state semifinals round for the second time in program history. "We are feeling confident," coach John Hansel said. "We were pretty loose before the game, and the girls were ready to play, for sure. They are just carrying that confidence into the semifinal." The night before the big game, Hansel said his squad spent the team dinner swapping stories about their childhood soccer successes, and even with the crucial postseason matchup just hours away, the Tigers did not look nervous. They looked like they were having fun. "It's just that feeling of family and the history of their careers that makes them comfortable on the field," Hansel said. The Tigers got on the board first in Tuesday's matchup. Johnson scored a goal at the 25-minute mark to give Spencer a 1-0 lead. After North Polk tied it up a few minutes later, senior Christian Small kicked one into the net to give her team the 2-1 advantage. Johnson scored a second goal before halftime to put the Tigers up 3-1, which stood as the final score. The win gave Spencer a 6-game winning streak and put the Tigers in the state semis for the first time since 2018. The seniors on this year's squads were freshmen last time the Tigers made it this far, and Hansel is convinced that their experience on the big stage will continue to be valuable. It definitely was on Tuesday. "That helped today," Hansel said. "With the seniors having that experience as freshmen, our freshmen that we played today played really well. I think our seniors were able to encourage them and to do it. We have a couple of players that they called COVID freshmen that didn't play last year that had some solid games too because of those seniors. The seniors got them going." Coming into the match, Johnson had 54 goals and 121 total points this season, both of which are team highs by wide margins. Even in the midst of the scorching hot weather on Tuesday, Johnson still managed to be the potent offensive threat that she has been all year long. "She is tenacious," Hansel said. "She doesn't give up. There are a lot of times where you think she's not going to get the ball, and she just finds a way to get the ball. Her first touch, past the defenders, is really solid. She has a knack for finding the goal, and she won't give up. Even in the heat, she'll keep going." The loss ended North Polk's season with a 17-3 overall record, while Spencer improved to 16-4. The Tigers will play on Wednesday at 12:30 against number 1 ranked Waverly Shell Rock for a spot in Friday's state finals game. With the history between the two programs, it is a matchup that the Tigers are eagerly anticipating. "I think we don't get very good competition around our area, so we are excited to play good teams," Johnson said. "Our entire team is excited to play them." The Gohawks beat Spencer 2-1 in the 2017 regionals round. Then in 2019, the Tigers lost to Waverly Shell Rock at the Waverly Tournament. This year, Spencer has a chance to avenge those losses and clinch their ticket to the team's very first state championship game. Both Hansel and his star player feel pretty confident that they can do it. "It feels amazing because we all just give it our all. We are going to be state champs," Johnson said. "That's what we are aiming for." We'll now move to Dear Abby and our first letter. Dear Abby, "My college senior daughter, Lisa, insists on inviting her significant other to every holiday and to our home when she's on break. This is Lisa's first girl-girl romance, and she thinks she's in love. This girlfriend has zero personality and adds nothing to our family dynamic. None of us can stand her. How can I nicely explain to my daughter that although she feels one way, we feel another? She honestly thinks she's going to marry this girl and is very pushy when it comes to inviting her wherever we are. Also, this girlfriend is only going into her junior year. She has 2 more years of school left. Once Lisa graduates this year, she'll be 5 hours from the girlfriend. She makes my daughter very weird and not in a good way. I'm praying this relationship will end after she graduates. It's horrible. If the girl isn't with her, Lisa calls her 10 times a day. Help. Mom knows better in New Jersey. Dear Mom, be patient. Because of the circumstances you mentioned in your letter, there is a good chance your daughter's fixation on her first love will lessen. I assume that when she returns from college, she will be socializing with other people. Cross your fingers and gently encourage it, because it may give her a different perspective. Absence does not always make the heart grow fonder. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been together for 18 years, married for 14. He has recently been hanging around a female friend who supposedly made a move on him while I was away, but he said he turned her down. He sends her private messages, looks her up on the social media, and likes every photo she puts up. Most of them are sexy. Now he wants to try new things in the bedroom. Should I be concerned? I have an uneasy feeling about this. When I told him I was going to confront her, he got upset with me. He has deleted messages because he said he didn't want me to get the wrong idea if I read them. I'm not sure how I should be feeling about this whole thing. Signed, Something's Up in New York. Dear Something's Up, right now you should be feeling your husband's relationship with this female friend is a threat. There's nothing innocent about deleting conversations that he knows would give you the wrong idea. His preoccupation with the sexy photos she is posting is hardly reassuring, and that he suddenly wants to try new things in the bedroom is a huge red flag in light of what else is going on. Quietly talk to a lawyer about what your options are as a wife of 14 years in New York. Gather as much financial information as you can, and then raise holy heck with your husband. You have a right to be upset. And that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, June 9th. I'm Dagna, your reader for this past hour. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you so much for listening.
In Africa, 5-year-old Charu has no choice. She and millions like her must walk miles every day for dirty water. But together, we can end their walk by providing clean water close by. Instead of spending hours walking to get water that makes them sick, girls can be in a classroom that expands their minds, and moms will gain back time to care for their families. Sons and daughters can grow up strong, finally free of sicknesses caused by dirty water. At World Vision, care about clean water runs deep. Deep enough to reach one new person with clean water every 10 seconds. Because every child, every person, everywhere deserves clean water and the chance to rise to their full potential. It's true. When you just add water, you change a life. Learn more at worldvision.org.